My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Matter Private Network.
On News Talk.
Ukraine's military says its forces have retaken over 3,000 square kilometres during a rapid counteroffensive in eastern Ukraine just this weekend gone. To get a sense of the state of play and the battlescape of Ukraine, we're joined by senior lecturer in security at the University of Bath, former NATO analyst Dr. Patrick Bury. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning, Jonathan.
It really was remarkable to watch this play out over the weekend. I found myself constantly refreshing my Twitter feed just to get updates on maps and to see how quickly they had moved after a period of prolonged stalemate.
It was, exactly. And for once, you know, we weren't doom scrolling. That's what I found, you know, unlike at the start of the war, you're like, oh God, everything's falling and going the wrong way. Suddenly it was like, they're here and they're here and they're here. It's been very significant, you know. It's essentially, if your listeners are thinking about, there's sort of three operational areas that the Russians and Ukrainians were contesting. The first one, which is up in the northeast, is called Kharkiv. That's where the attack has come. Then you had the center where the Donbass is, where there was a lot of attritional warfare, and the Russians had made slow progress at great cost since about May. And then down the south in Kherson, which is where the Ukrainians said they were going to counterattack, and they have attacked there, but it's not been as successful. What you've seen is they've managed to amass artillery and enough mobile forces to punch a way through. The Russians had actually drawn troops, better troops, away from the north up in Kherson, brought them down to the south for the expected Kherson offensive. And the Ukrainians have punched through. They're getting good intelligence, and I would imagine other advice from the US and other allies about where the Russians are. And they're attacking, you know, space where basically the Russians aren't, or they're very weak, and it's forcing them to fall back. But essentially what's happened now, as of, it's a very fluid and in flux at the moment. But that northern, northeast operational area is gone. So, you know, the Ukrainians have actually taken a whole, what it could be equivalent as a whole front. And that means that the next one down in the Donbass is now, those forces are going to have to, you know, turn and also defend not only to their front, but to their right, shall we say.
It's a real challenge for Russia to spin this in any way other than an absolute collapse of their force in that area. This is putting pressure on Vladimir Putin, certainly his generals, many of whom have already been sacked as a result of their failure to hold the line. The challenge here is how they can get out of this. How do they reverse out of a situation whereby they're clearly after suffering a very bad defeat?
So the Ukrainian, the challenge for the Ukrainians, if you think about it, one, they want to keep the pressure on. When you've got a sort of mobile, you've got round into the back of the enemy, and you're basically attacking as fast as you want. You want to keep moving to keep that confusion and panic going. But on the other hand, you want to be careful you don't get overextended, which is a problem. For the Russians, they really have to secure their own lines now. And fall back to defensive positions. The Ukrainians have already got around past one of the river lines, which the Russians would have naturally fallen back on. So really, it's kind of in a state of great flux at the moment, and we'll see what happens during the day. You would expect the Ukrainians Ukrainians now at some point to be able to stop and pause, because you don't want to outrun your logistics and your artillery as well, as much as you are advancing. But, you know, they're even 25 kilometers from one of the major cities called Severodonetsk, which was taken after a couple of months of fighting by the Russians. And the Ukrainians are only 25 kilometers from that, and that's in the Donetsk area. So I think for the Russians, it's the biggest defeat they've suffered since their withdrawal from Kiev. I think politically, you know, you're looking at one of the most important military actions potentially since the end of the Second World War.
Let's bring in Ina Sovsun, who is a member of the Ukrainian Parliament. Ina, good morning to you.
Hi. That would be Ina.
Ina, I beg your pardon. That's my mistake, Ina. Can I ask for your reaction and as to how events have played out over the last few days? What are people in Ukraine feeling about this change of fortune, if I could put it that way?
Well, as you can imagine, the general mood over here is rather optimistic. Of course, we are cautiously optimistic, but I think that was the change that we have all been waiting for. After a couple of months of rather slow movements on the front line, the counteroffensive in Kharkiv region have, of course, gave everyone hope. It showed to what extent the spirit and commitment and discipline matter, even if you are facing the overwhelming force. Because even over there in the territories that in Kharkiv region, you have to realize that the Russians had the majority. They still had they had superiority there, but the correct decisions by our commanders on the field and the spirit of the Ukrainian soldiers, and of course the Western weapons that we received, have made this change possible. So we are cautiously optimistic.
And morale is a huge factor in any battle. It would appear morale is very high on the Ukrainian side and quite low on the Russian side. But you have also taken a significant number of prisoners from the Russians in this offensive. Do you know what's happening to them?
Well, we are treating the prisoners of war according to the humanitarian law. So we are taking them to prisons, and we very much hope that we can exchange them for the prisoners that Russia is holding, particularly those who have been captured in Azovstal, because we know that they are being tortured. We know that they are under extreme pressure. So of course, the prisoner exchange is going to happen at some point. But there is another issue that I wanted to mention in terms of those liberated territories is in those territories, we are already finding evidence of the war crimes committed there. We have the Ukrainian police forces have found several corpses with the signs of torture in Kharkiv region in the liberated territory, which confirms the previous information we had about people being tortured over there if they were suspected of being overly pro-Ukrainian. So that is part of the reality there as well.
Ina, how confident are you that this campaign can continue momentum, possibly not to the degree that it has enjoyed in the last few days, but that you will continue to put pressure on invading forces in the south and west of the country?
Well, they're not on the west, luckily, but on the south, there is some movement.
I beg your pardon. Sorry, the east of the country. Forgive me, that was my mistake.
Sure. So the south, there have been some movement as well. So Ukrainian forces are also moving closer to Kherson. So we are waiting for news from there. There is a lot of action taking place in Donetsk region right now. Now that Kharkiv region is almost fully liberated, I suggest we don't get unrealistic. I don't suspect that there will be such a great movement in the next days as we have seen in the last 5 days. But the progress is there. And what is most important, that the whole chain of command in Russian army has just collapsed. And I think we have to use this momentum as much as possible.
If I can go back to you, Patrick Bury, that collapse of the chain of command, how damaging is that in the long term? Because if the morale has reached the point whereby they feel they're not being supported by their senior officers or indeed by their leaders in Moscow, how much of a challenge is that going to be right throughout the Russian forces who are in Ukraine on false pretenses as they were sent in and now realizing they're going hungry, their wages aren't being paid? There are many challenges that any army would struggle with.
as Irina said, you know, the when something goes right, okay, if you take a sort of an engineering perspective on this, when a military operation goes right, it's for numerous different things, from morale and cohesion to Western weapons, the ability to train, your ability to sort of organize yourselves in concert, you know. And the same when things go wrong, when you have a catastrophic failure, it's numerous things, you know. It'll be command and control. The HIMARS rockets, which have basically over time cut off Russian frontline forces from regular logistics supply, whether it's food, whether it's pay, you know, these things are really important to keep and demoralize troops anyway, or less well-trained troops fighting. The Russians do have better troops down in Kherson. Some of them are elite units, although they've lost a lot of the manpower in some of these elite units. You'd expect them to fight much better than some of the ones they've pushed through up in Kharkiv. The territory is still really quite large too, you know, that has to be taken back in Kherson, and notwithstanding another collapse, that would take time just to go for the Ukrainians to take back as well. But yeah, look, I think that we're also, you know, for all the sort of success that this has brought and the momentum and crucially the sort of political clout that it's shown to the world that the Ukraine can do this and we can finish it quicker if you give us more kit and more help is very important. But we're not out of the woods because Putin, you know, is in a difficult position now, I think. And we know that he, you know, he's rattled the sort of nuclear saber before in terms of that kind of thing. And he's obviously got warnings to say stop doing that and he's toned it down. But the Russians do have in their doctrine, if they're being defeated, the use of low-yield tactical nuclear weapons. They could, and I know the Ukrainian general staff are a bit worried about this, as are others who are watching it very closely. And the other thing could be a chemical attack of some sort. So, you know, there is the potential here for escalation. We haven't seen any signs of it yet, but if his army continues to collapse, it's something that could be considered.
Yeah, but it'll be interesting to see how their supporters in Russia, in China and elsewhere would react if they went down that rather catastrophic route to try and regain the momentum. But Patrick, we need to watch what's happening in Moscow as well. Dissenting voices have started to appear amongst the propagandists, not calling out the war for what it is, but to call out the war for not going well in a way that one would have expected they almost should have been arrested for.
Absolutely, yeah. Just in the last 24 hours, we saw on State Control TV military analysts arguing over what should be done, and one of them in particular calling out this is a disaster, and either we need to mobilise fully or we need to seek a negotiated settlement. Now, mobilisation, the Russian army isn't the Red Army of days gone past. Mobilisation, even if they were able to start it, a mass mobilisation tomorrow, it would take them months before the troops are any of use to be on the to do anything other than man, like trenches, for example. You know, any kind of training would take them months, probably years or a year or so. So that's not really a solution in the short term. But I think, you know, the fact that these debates are playing out shows on State Control TV shows that, you know, you can imagine what's going on behind the scenes politically. I'm not a criminologist. I don't know how the actual things would fall as it is, but it's certainly it's shaken things up, I think, politically and put them in much more of a bind than they were.
Okay. Ina Sovson, Member of Parliament for the Ukrainian People, and also Dr. Patrick Bury, Senior Lecturer in Security at University of Bath. Thank you both very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
My name is Lily, and I've had hidradenitis suppurativa, HS, for years. I finally found some relief since taking Cosentyx. Relief means I can show up more.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for adults with moderate to severe hidradenitis suppurativa, HS. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your dermatologist about Cosentyx.